On this week's 51%, female film directors. There weren't any nominated for this year's Oscars, so we'll turn elsewhere to hear from the women's director chair. And one director talks about her group, Film Fatales.
Instead of, you know, being depressed about how few women directors there are, what can we do? We can get together and we can support each other and we can help make more films.
I'm Allison Dunn and this is 51%.
We're farther along, we know all about it. Farther along, we'll understand why.
Not one woman was nominated in the Best Director category for the 87th Academy Awards. Also, there were no women nominated in other categories such as Best Writing Adapted Screenplay or Best Writing Original Screenplay, so we're going to fill in the gaps by turning to a film festival from the fall whose motto is fiercely independent. The 15th anniversary Woodstock Film Festival in New York showcased 8 narrative feature films directed by women, its most ever. Mira Blaustein, who is co-founder and executive director of the festival, says the films were chosen on the basis of merit, not gender.
Of course, we have a lot of women who've directed documentaries in the festival, shorts directed by women. There's a lot of films produced by women. But the difficult part of in the industry is women in the helm when it comes to feature narratives. In Hollywood, it's about 4-7% max for film directed by women. In Woodstock, it's nearly 50%. It's amazing. I'm very, very happy about that. I'm very proud of it. And I hope that in a few years from now, I will not have to be proud of that because the balance will just be there.
The film festival also featured a Women in the Director's Chair panel, and I interviewed 3 of the panelists. Deborah Granick won the Best Director Prize at the 2004 Sundance Film Festival for her first feature film, Down to the Bone. She was a 2011 Oscar nominee for Best Writing Adapted Screenplay for Winter's Bone. The film also was nominated for Best Picture, among other categories. Granick told me about her documentary film for the Woodstock Film Festival, but first, let's hear about her idea for gender neutrality.
Yeah, it's just a thought. It's just a thought. You know, it's like, it was a thought, you know, if you go by initials, what would happen for a year if we all just submitted initials and we didn't know each other's genders in the press or on the internet, you know, in the social media world? I don't mean about like Facebook. I just mean about sort of authorship of articles, and you know, it would just be an interesting. It's just a query. It's just a what if, you know, to think.
Talk about your film here, please.
The documentary I have here is called Stray Dog, and it deals with some Vietnam vets in southern Missouri who try to unravel sort of what it's been like to come of age in that era. Many years later, it's a look at what happens to a generation many years after the war. You know, partly it's the questions like, oh, Vietnam, why bring that up again, you know? But partly why to bring it up is that we really are, as a country that worships youth and the next new thing, we forget what we've done in the past and where we've been, and so cultural amnesia is a kind of an issue that we face. And this was a group of people that were willing to talk, to sort of fill in some of the gaps in that amnesia, I think, and they were also very charismatic, quirky Americans with just a lot of texture to their lives, a lot of survival instincts.
What did you bring to it?
You know, I think in the way that I view them as other, you know, that I don't know about what it's like and never will know what it's like to sort of be a really burly, testosteronic male. They don't know what it's like to be me, but so the mutual otherness. You know, in some ways, sometimes otherness works in a dialectic, in an exchange, because we do find that we're curious about what we don't know. What I bring to it, maybe, is looking at the sides of male behavior that I don't know. I'm very interested in brotherhood. I'm very interested in the ways that men nurture and support each other. I like to see that.
What changed for you after Winter's Bone? As a woman director, because that's where we're coming at all of this from, how did that change for your next film?
It didn't. You know, acclaim for the film makes you realize that there were a lot of ingredients in the film that seemed to work. So it helps you figure out that people really like in-depth photography of real locations. You know, it helps you figure out that there will be some segment of the population that can handle a film with a very minimalistic score. It helps you figure out that some things can fly that are dear to your tastes, you know. The fact that it was enjoyed, I kind of stand by this. I mean, I hope it's not too vague, but it inspires you to want to make another film. Instead of leaving you flattened and defeated, you feel bolstered. You feel, you know, that you do want to carry on.
But are more doors open because, oh, it's Deborah Granite from Winter Bone?
No.
No.
No. Because I'd have to pick either a set of celebrities or a topic that those doors, you know, all the doors that I like are the ones I have to open myself with my team. That's what's behind those doors. You know, what's behind the doors that might fling open, I think, often is content that is not my preference.
I wanted to just ask you a male-female kind of thing. What slams over the head almost on a daily basis that, yes, you know, I am a woman director because look what I'm facing all the time? And contrarily, what is something that is so subtle people might be surprised to know, but you're so keenly aware of it?
I think a slamming in the face would be like, wow, I feel useless and empty when I see films about women that are killed, about sexual violence, about, no matter how cool the detectives are, the fact is the women in the film are dead. They're dead and they've got horns on them and they're splayed open and their bodies are exposed and it's humiliating. It's freaking humiliating. And it doesn't matter that the guys are sexy and cool. I'm humiliated as a female unless I transpose myself and I'm like either envisioning those detectives as, you know, women or identify with the male detectives. So the amount of the body count, the ease with which films are kind of considered compelling if the women are kind of knocked off, that slams over the head. That's just obvious and big and boring.
And you'd mentioned the guns.
Yeah.
I loved
your
comment. It was a sad comment, but true.
Yeah.
About, you know,
and
in American films.
And the murder is the ultimate stake. We've got a lot of buses going by all over American cities that have the big shows of the season. Killing, stalking, murder. Those are the three shows I'm aware of that I see big billboards for. Killing, stalking, you know, killing, stalking, murder. Or we've got vampires and zombies. I mean, you know, I don't know. I know I'm a killjoy on that front, and you know, I was told since I was like, you know, 13 to lighten up, but, you know, I love comedy, but the fact is, and I want to do comedy, and you know, that's what makes me laugh and smile. And in the documentary, there's a lot of wonderful, robust comedy that I feel is what brothers sort of share with each other, you know, men, and luckily I got to be privy to some of it, and I really liked it. Sometimes I felt like I wanted to be male, you know, just like be in on it, you know. But they let me at least see it, you know, or hear it. And then the subtle stuff, I think, is more about the taste and, you know, of what we've become, you know, our expectations of what we've become used to in terms of, like, the kill factor or the murder or the woundable body factor or, as you said, even just the jolt of nano attention span. So that's the subtle stuff. And that's, I think that goes for both genders.
Leah Meyerhoff is a writer, director, and producer whose debut feature-length narrative, I Believe in Unicorns, screened in Woodstock.
I became a director because when I was growing up, there weren't that many female roles on screen that I could relate to, and I wanted to tell stories with strong female protagonists.
Are you feeling that you're up against walls? Or you, clearly you're able to because you already have
I think when on a personal anecdotal level, no. I feel like I can do whatever I want to do, but when you step back and look at the numbers and look at the statistics, and less than 5% of Hollywood directors are women, yeah, there are walls there. But I think instead of getting caught up on kind of where is the glass ceiling that I'm bumping up against, I think there's hope in just, let's just keep making films, and we're at a place now where we can kind of drive our own content to a certain extent, especially if you can be a writer-director or a director-producer and not let the kind of statistics pull you down. I would like to be at a place where half the directors are women, half the actors on screen are women. It's just, you know, there's a direct representation of diversity that we have in our lives on screen. And so with that in mind, anytime a woman directs a film, I think that's a plus, that's an advance, that helps all of us. And it, even whether it's Spider-Man 3 or whether it's a heartfelt independent film, my personal taste, I like the smaller performance-driven independent films. But I'm happy that Kathryn Bigelow is making Hurt Locker as well, you know?
I believe in unicorns. Talk about why you made this film.
Yeah,
and the message you do hope to get out.
Mm-hmm. So I Believe in Unicorns, it tells the story of a teenage girl who runs away from home with an older boy. And their relationship is not quite the fantasy she had imagined. So it's investigating that those first loves and that dramatic time in one's life. But this girl is very imaginative. And so there are these kind of fantastical sequences with stop motion puppet animation and dragons and unicorns. And there's kind of, it's social realism meets magical realism. And I wanted to tell a story about a girl that I could have related to when I was 16. I think, there's just not that many films with women to begin with, let alone women who are a bit different or artistic or, you know, not your typical female lead character. And I wanted to create a film about a girl who felt real and authentic and intelligent and imaginative and someone that, you know, young audiences today can look at and see something of their own lives on screen.
Meyerhoff also is the founder of Film Fatales.
Film Fatales is, while I was prepping I Believe in Unicorns, I was reaching out to other filmmakers for advice, as we all do.
This was around when?
This was a little over a year ago, and I was having coffee or phone calls with various directors, you know, Kimberly Pierce and Allison Anders and Deborah Granick and, you know, just other, often women directors were the most generous with their advice. And I ended up having a dinner party at my house, and I invited six filmmakers over, and we all talked about film. And it was such an empowering, supportive, wonderful experience. At the end of it, one of the women said, let's do this again. I'll host next month. And it just organically formed into like a rotating dinner party format of women directors. And it has now expanded into over 100 women with chapters, local groups that meet every first week of the month in New York City, in Los Angeles, in London, in Australia, which started one in Latin America. So there's a real need for this community of women directors. And it's almost like it's as a response to the Hollywood Boys Club, you know, we've started our own girls club in a way. It's filmmaking is such a collaborative effort that it's wonderful to have a community, and it's wonderful to have a community of other women doing what you're doing. And we are so supportive of each other. We will co-write, we will co-direct, we'll co-produce. It's actually wonderful to go to a film festival and be like, oh, I know you, oh, I know you. And it's a really like warm, welcoming community.
Or recruit.
And recruit. After right? Every screening, I'm like, any, you know, my Q&As, I say, are there any aspiring female directors in the audience? Come talk to me after. And it's really, it's a peer mentoring program. It's instead of, you know, being depressed about how few women directors there are, what can we do? We can get together and we can support each other and we can help make more films and just keep making films and mentor each other. And, you know, the rising tide lifts all boats. It's true. Like any success for any woman director or film about a woman is a success for all of us.
You made a comment on the panel, I think you made it a couple times, about giving yourself permission.
Mm-hmm.
What did you mean by that?
It was the best piece of advice that I got before making my first feature film. It was from Kim Pierce, actually, who made Boys Don't Cry. And she said, you can't wait around for other people with power to give you permission to make your film. You need to give yourself permission. And I say it all the time because I think directors and artists, and especially women directors, I'll say, often are our own worst enemies. We'll hold ourselves back. We'll say, oh, the script's not perfect. Oh, I don't have enough funding. I don't have the right actor. There's a million reasons why you could not make a film and why you could wait and spend years and years and years in development with a script and never move forward. And it takes you, you're your own best advocate. You need to believe in your film more than anyone, especially if you're going to be captain of this ship and convincing all these other people to jump on board and collaborate. It takes you to say, I need to make this film no matter what. I'm going to set a date, and no matter what, I'm going to make it. And I give that advice all the time, and I have seen it work again and again and again. You know, there's a member of Film Fatales, Deborah Campmeyer, and she's made several films, been to Sundance, big movies, and she's a bit older, and she hasn't made a film in a while, and she had a, you know, $10 million production. It was taking a long time to get off the ground. And she's coming to these meetings, and she's watching all these, you know, younger filmmakers go out and make their low-budget indies. And she's like, I'm going to do this. I'm just gonna write another script that's, you know, under $1 million, and I'm just going to go make it. And she just made it. And it's like you can empower yourself, and you can empower each other, but you're your best advocate.
Jenna Ricker, who also sat on the panel, directed The American Side.
You know, there's that in an ideal world, we just have a director's panel. We no longer have to give it, you know, male or female. The reality right now, though, is had there been a director's panel, probably would have been a male moderator and maybe one female on the panel. So that is where the challenge lies, in that we really do need to say, hey, look, these are women telling stories in a predominantly male-oriented industry still. And the more we say that we're doing this and we're here, the more maybe some younger, first of all, the youth can say, I can do that. They can see themselves in that. But also say, like, enough with them, you know, maybe demystify some of it. You know, at the end of the day, we all have to say action and cut. Doesn't matter if it's a male or a female. We all have to tell a story, and we all have to lead a crew and a cast. So I think it's important, though, for them to start seeing women more doing that.
I liked your story about behind the scenes, about how someone had noticed that your set was more equitable, that you had women represented on various levels of your crew.
Yeah.
And the best part was for someone outside to walk in and notice.
Yeah, that was kind of great.
Good and bad.
Yeah, right, you're right. It is that it's noticeable. In fact, that it was brought to my attention, because for me it was, these are the best people for the job. But what was great is to have that assembled and look around, and, you know, in the grip department, in the gaff department, there were women. This is notoriously male domain. So even those moments were kind of great, and the leaders of both of those departments were in that case both men, but they were so great. There was no boys club sexism, not a dynamic that I picked up on. So I think it's good and bad that it got noticed. You're right. Like, again, it goes back to that, ideally there'll be a panel about directors and we won't have to say it's male or female. But at the same time, you know, maybe this is the way the world works. We're not the same. Men and women are not the same people, you know. So maybe it'll always be that way. It's just that in our case, it leans towards women being the minority.
Right, because certainly if this panel were male directors, there wouldn't have been a men's directors panel.
Yes, exactly.
Right, but is that what you're saying?
Yes. I do think what's interesting is trying to change what we assume to be a male or female story. That, to me, is going to be an interesting thing to see change.
Can you expand upon that? That's an interesting comment.
Yeah, I mean, this particular film, I'm here, The American Side, that I'm here at the festival, is a noir. And even though the two of the female leads are like the strongest characters, it does follow a male detective. You know, that's definitely part of the genre. But people have said to me, oh, you directed such a masculine film. And it was such a curious statement, because what makes it masculine? That it's a little gritty, you know? Like, it's too, you know, does somebody say to James L. Brooks, oh, you directed a feminine film there with terms of endearment? I don't think they do. So that's another level of awareness to have, that, like, stories are stories. If they speak to you, they speak to you. Does it matter if it was a female, you know, protagonist or male protagonist, a female director or male director? If the story worked and it spoke to you, whether you're male or female, that's the takeaway.
Advice to your film school colleagues from your, well, the women who are in film school now.
Oh, God.
Or not in film school and can still become.
Yeah, exactly.
Any advice?
Yeah, the advice, off the top of my head, I would say the advice is look around you and start to realize who you work well with, who inspires you, who challenges you in a good way, you know, who leaves their ego at the door. Find those people, start to collaborate with them. Don't be afraid to ask for something. Definitely don't tell yourself no first. There's a lot of times, and I think it's a female part of how we grow up, is you say, oh, well, I probably can't get that, or that probably won't happen. Let someone else say no. You can always ask, you know, and you can always find a way, but you have to ask, and you have to sort of decide that what you're asking for is okay. Have some thick skin. No doesn't mean no, it just means there's another way to ask.
The fourth panelist was Emmy-winning and Golden Globe-nominated actress Courtney Cox. Lydia Pilcher observed the panel. She produced The Sisterhood of Night, directed and written by women. It's about a group of teenage girls who become fed up with social media and go off the grid. While the film debuted at the Woodstock Film Festival, it is scheduled for a limited theatrical release in April.
Well, I'm Lydia Pilcher. and I chair the Women's Impact Network of the Producers Guild of America. And we're a guild of 6,000 producers nationally. About 50% of those producers are women. And one of the priorities right now for the Women's Impact Network is to dispel the myth that women's films and female-driven content is not commercial, because it's absolutely not true. When you look at the data, when you look at the box office, when you look at the, you know, the audience, you can see that money is being left on the table and female audiences are being underserved.
How do we fix that?
Well, I think first and foremost, we have to dispel this myth, because we know that women are 51% of the ticket buyers at the box office. We know that women are 65% of television viewership. So we know that the audience is there. And when you look at the numbers, if you look, for instance, at the 100 highest earning movies of 2013, you'll see that the movies with the female protagonist earned 20% more on average than movies with the male protagonist. So that means that 20% of female-centered movies are performing at a higher level. So I think what we're dealing with is a discrepancy between the reality of where money can be made and what audiences want to see, and the reality of female-driven content that's being supported in our society. And we can look at that in a number of different ways, but it seems to be manifested in an institutional resistance to female-driven storytelling.
What did you think of the panel?
Well, I'm an independent producer. I've produced over 35 feature films in my career, and I mostly produce for women. I would say, a good 60% of the films I produce are with women directors. So I'm very aware of the burden that women directors carry of being tagged with female before director. And at the same time, I think that everybody wants to just be gender neutral and do what we do and not have to feel that we're pigeonholed. But at the same time, we're at a point where the numbers have not changed in over a decade, and we're talking, Hollywood movies, 6%, women directors, 15% writers, 25% producers. And we're talking an independent film, it's a little bit better, but we're still in the 20% for directors, 25% for writers, and still 25% for producers. So those numbers have not changed in over a decade. Sundance Institute and Women in Film did a study through the USC School of Annenberg, and they showed that these numbers hadn't changed, and it was shocking when I heard that. It was just absolutely shocking. I mean, I work in a very female-centric, company, and those are the kind of stories we're interested in telling, and I just wasn't aware that the dial hadn't moved. And I think that, that particular study that showed that the numbers haven't changed pointed to a number of factors and why those numbers hadn't changed. And, one is the cronyism that Thelma and Adams mentioned on the panel. And I think that there are myths about, the confidence level that women have, whether they can lead a team, whether they can lead a set. I mean, some of it is access to financing and the belief of financiers. I mean, all of these things, I have to say, as a woman producer pitching women directors, I have experienced it. It's true that it's there. And we have to keep fighting, and we have to keep, making our voices heard. I tweeted something recently that someone else said, which is that if women want to get anywhere, we have to learn to interrupt more. And I think that it's not something that we enjoy doing or feel okay or wish we didn't have to do it, but, we might have to.
And we have to wrap up our show for this week. Thanks to Katie Britton for production assistance. Our executive producer is Dr. Alan Chartok. Our theme music is Glow in the Dark by Kevin Bartlett. This show is a national production of Northeast Public Radio. If you'd like to hear this show again, sign up for our podcast or visit the 51% archives on our website at wamc.org. This week's show is number 1336.